This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
Steve, you've brought today some wonderful photos of you on stage in the Queen of the Whole Universe. Could you just take me through a number of these and just tell me what's going on here?
Sure. First photo you give me is Miss France, Fanny Toulouse, in all her glory, with her mouth wide open. She's wearing a very tight-fitting corset, which I can assure you was extremely uncomfortable, and an even more uncomfortable backpack of about 40 or 50 different coloured ostrich feathers with a headpiece to match. Coming up in the rear was one of the three backup dancers. This was at the very end of my performance. The backup dancers were and are amazing. There are three of the Southside sisters who are an act in Auckland and who are phenomenal. But Fanny Toulouse is certainly clearly letting rip with a mouth larger than life, I hate to say it.
Are you this extravagant in real life?
Of course I am. Surprised you have to ask, but what I'm wearing. Next photo, probably one of my favourites actually. This is my last performance, Miss Transylvania. Nora Vane. This is myself and three of the backup dancers doing the time warp. And they were amazing. Me? Well, they were amazing. I look great. They were amazing. The next photo you've handed me is Miss India. She was slightly fuller figure there, I think. Perhaps retaining a little water. Iona Derry. This was during her acceptance speech. Again, wearing a rather tight-fitting corset. And, of course, all of the accessories that went with it, including the bangles, the bracelets, the earrings, the uncomfortable nose piece, and so it goes on. She does look quite gorgeous, nevertheless, for a fuller-figured woman. And the last photo is Miss France again on stage with two of her male dancers. I'm thinking one of them may have been one of the guys that stood on her skirt, but I won't name him, and her four puppet performers next to her, all dressed in similar costumes, of course.
And you made all these puppets?
I did, and unfortunately you can't see them, but they actually all had the face of Lady Diana on them. But they're just too far away to see. But yes, I did make the whole shebang.
And these are life size, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, they were as tall as me. So they were approximately 6 foot tall.
Do you still have them?
No, I actually gave them to a very dear friend of mine, you may have heard of and hopefully know, Buckwheat. So Buckwheat's got them in her bag of tricks so that if she ever needs four dummies, they're hers.
How did you first get involved in the pageant?
The concept was screened actually at one of the Gay and Lesbian Film Festivals a number of years ago as a documentary. I understand the concept was sort of derived from an LA-based, I think, show, which had gone on for many, many years. So from that, Jonathan and Kevin, Buffy and Bimbo, got the concept and got hold of the concept and brought it alive here in Auckland or New Zealand.
And what was your introduction to the show? How did you get involved?
I could say I've been on the drag circuit, on the very periphery of it, probably for about 10 or 11 years now, only ever doing charity gigs, so to speak, generally for causes relating to the AIDS Foundation and related causes. So Jonathan sort of knew me a little bit from there, I guess, but my exposure sort of to the drag world is reasonably limited, and certainly was at that time. And I think it just through sort of networking and advertising, I learned that they were going to bring the concept alive here, so I was keen to get involved.
And the concept isn't just about putting on a show, is it? It's a fundraiser?
Totally, yeah, totally. At that point in time, from memory, the first few, I think predominantly related to the AIDS Foundation and related causes, which it still predominantly is. So really, it was the bigger picture. It was relating to the cause, yeah. And through the cause, thankfully, having a good time as well. So it was a double whammy for me.
So you've done drag before. What is it about drag that draws you in?
Listen, the first time I did drag was for my 40th. I'm now 51. I'm fascinated by the art. I'm fascinated by drag queens. I could basically watch a good drag show every night and not get bored. But since doing it myself, I now realise it's not as easy as it looks. But I just love the whole entertainment side of it, the whole package. Mm.
When you say it's not as easy as it looks, what are some of the issues?
Have you ever tried walking 6-inch heels for 4 hours? It's not pretty. You know, from putting the makeup on to wearing the makeup, including, you know, the long eyelashes, the dangly earrings, the wig that gets in your eyes and your lips because you've got that much lipstick plastered on them, the 6-inch heels, the tight-fitting dresses, the pantyhose, the tucking. Basically, it's not a pleasant experience. But of course, it's worth it for the glitz and the glamour.
What are some of the positive experiences from doing drag?
Particularly relating it to the show, the friends I've made, to be honest. Yeah, I've made what I will see as long life friends now from it. And also personally being able to be part of, as much as it may sound sort of contrived, giving something back to my community, because I don't do a lot for my community, so it's my way of actually giving something back and selfishly enjoying it at the same time. So knowing that you've been part of a fundraising exercise is positive for me.
I'm wondering if we can just take a step back and just maybe look at a bit more in detail the kind of transformation from going from your everyday persona to your drag persona. Can you take me through that kind of process?
It's a long one for us, or for me. I generally do it with a couple of friends of mine. And from start to finish, the process for us generally takes about 3 hours plus on a good day. You know, it's from clipping all the hair off your body to having a close shave where your skin is nearly red raw, to then starting the process, the foundation, blocking out your eyebrows, drawing more eyebrows, putting on the eyeshadows, putting on the glitter, putting on the eyelashes, putting on the lip liner, putting on the lipstick, putting on the blusher. And then, hopefully you've got something that you are happy with and you're happy to take out to the public, but it's not always that easy. Because I don't do it that often, it's not too uncommon for me to get halfway through the process and start again. I know.
And starting again means just wiping
it all off. For me, eyebrows are the hardest things because they do need to be sort of at least related to one another and rather than distant cousins. So I like some sort of relativity there to the eyebrows. And they're hard for me.
At what point does the switchover happen in your mind? I mean, you're talking about very, very kind of physical things. When does that happen for the mind?
Probably when I put the wig on. Because until then, I've still got Steve's hair. So as far as sort of from the neck up, as soon as the wig goes on, that's it.
And what does Steve become?
Lola. Generally. Unless it's a show-related performance. And then, of course, it's whatever country I take and the name I give myself.
And can you describe Lola's personality?
Well, she's clearly a more mature lady, so she's reasonably, I was going to say soft in nature, but then she'll do a lot of things that Steve wouldn't do. For instance, if we've been out at a performance or a function or something, and we'll generally go to a straight bar rather than the gay bar, mainly because drag queens are a dime a dozen in a gay bar and we're not that special, but go to a straight bar, we're extremely special. And Lola generally tries to, you know, lift up a straight man's shirt or two or three or four, or just have a good time with them within reason, and generally they're very, very accommodating. So she'll push the boundaries where Steve certainly wouldn't do that sort of thing.
So when you came into the Queen of the Whole Universe, did you come in as Lola or...?
No, I came in because we represent countries, and at that time we're actually given our countries. The first year I was involved, I was Miss Russia. So with that I took on the name Ivana Vodkashot. And there Ivana was born and launched onto the world stage, of course.
How much time do you spend in creating something for being one of the countries?
As the years have gone on, I think I've been in five shows now, and always as a what we call an Act Two girl, which means that we go through to the final stages, which requires a 5 to 6 minute performance to basically represent your country. So as the years have gone on, the requirements, the perception of the show, it's become bigger, brighter and better every year, to the point that I know that the last time I performed as Miss Transylvania, I'm certainly not a natural dancer by any stretch of the imagination, so I had a professional dancer put my routine together, teach me my routine. I had six basically professional dancers as my backup dancers. So for me it's got to that level, and I guess I've just raised the bar to that level, and I wouldn't be comfortable in doing anything less now. But that's just me personally, on a personal level. But because of all that, it's become a very expensive exercise as well, because these people need to be paid, and rightly so. So from a very raw sort of concept and performance on year one to what it is now, to a point it's unrecognisable.
How far out from the performance would you be putting a routine together?
Up until the very last one, I would usually start the rehearsals about 6 weeks out, but the last one, because of work commitments, including having to go overseas, I did the whole routine in about a 2 week period, but that was performing every night, sort of rehearsals every night. So in some ways it was great, but in others it was pretty full on, because I do have a full-time job that is pretty full on. So it's a commitment for everybody.
And do you get complete artistic control over your country, or are you guided in what you should be singing and dancing and
no,
doing?
No, complete artistic control. Yeah, yeah. Jonathan and Kevin rightly require, particularly Jonathan, an overview of what the content of your performance is going to be, and they will come to a rehearsal or two. But to date, they've sort of never suggested any changes or anything.
Could we perhaps go through some of the countries that you've represented, and you talk me through what you did with those countries?
Yep. For Russia, being the first one, it was at Sky City, and I was fortunate enough to be able to be let down from the gods via a crashed Sputnik and land on stage that way. From there,
And you were saying this was your kind of raw first appearance.
This is my raw first appearance, yeah. Yeah. I don't do heights at all, so it was quite a major for me. So by the time they let down on stage, I think had a quick change of costume, where at that stage there were two 12-year-old gymnasts who came on, which I joined them, and we did the ball, we did the ribbon, and of course weightlifting. So that was generally the concept for Miss Russia, and there it was narrated throughout the 5 or 6 minute performance. So the next year I was Miss India, Iona Derry, and that concept was I put a 1.5 minute video together, which started off out at the airport with me walking through customs laden with bags, and then I went to some of the traditional Indian sort of sites slash venues in Auckland, like a mosque, a dairy. I went to Barner Brothers in Ponsonby Road and just happened to run into Mark Ellis there, so he was kind enough to get involved in the video clip, and that culminated in going to an Indian apparel shop where I purchased my outfit, and then I came out on stage in the same outfit and had an Indian dance routine with six support dancers, female and a male dancer. So that was the concept with that. The following year was Miss France, Fanny Toulouse, which started off with a solo of me on stage with a photo montage that I'd taken previously, and then into sort of a dance routine with what ended up to be three male dancers. The fourth one had injured himself during that week, so we had a bit of a change of routine there. Of course, included the can-can, at which time when I was lifted up, one of the boys stood on my skirt, so I went up, the skirt went down, which for a novice was heart and mouth sort of experience for me, completely unenjoyable, but we got through it.
How did the audience react?
I suspect a lot of them thought it was part of the routine, but believe me, it wasn't. It was terrifying for someone who didn't know what to do. And culminated in a bit of a finale with backup dancers again. It was a lot of fun. And then my final Act 2 performance to date has been Miss Transylvania, which to a point was probably the easiest concept for me to do. Starting off with Michael Jackson's Thriller, you know, the dancers were behind tombstones and they came out and acted as the Gauls, and they were amazing because they were professional dancers, unlike myself. Then went into then I had a video clip of Hilary Barry doing a news announcement for about 40 seconds, sort of to allow costume change and to sort of incorporate or lead into the next two parts of the performance, which was of course Time Warp and Sweet Transvestite. So it was a bit of a foregone conclusion. The songs I'd use, it wasn't rocket science, but I had a blast.
Now, three of those acts actually won Queen of the Whole Universe.
They did.
That's very impressive.
Very lucky. I sleep with the right people. it is a buzz, and I can't deny it, because everybody, particularly the finalists, do put a hell of a lot of time and effort and cost into it. So it's nice to be recognised.
Can you describe for me what it's like being on stage and being a winner?
Being on stage, terrifying. To be honest, I haven't really enjoyed each experience on the night, which is a little disappointing in a way, because I love the show. Having watched the show three or four times now, I think it's unique, but it's amazing, because at the end of the day, it's a whole group of amateurs who have come together for a one-night performance, and it is phenomenal in lots of ways. Being on the stage, as I say, I'm not a natural performer, certainly not a natural dancer, and with the pressure of probably the pressure and expectations I put on myself, and now the pressure and expectations that others put on me, as I say, it hasn't been an enjoyable experience in lots of ways, but I still love it. winning still amazes me each time I've won, to be honest, because it certainly isn't a given, because the other girls are amazingly talented and their concepts are phenomenal as well. So it's never taken for granted. It's never a given. And it's a real buzz. But ultimately, as I've said on each acceptance speech, everyone's a winner. And that's true. You know, it's as simple as that. Everyone who participates, from the girls to the boys, to everybody behind the scenes, you know, it's a group package sort of thing.
So maybe not necessarily enjoying it as much on the night. Is there a point either before the performance or after the performance that you look back and go, actually, this is really fun, this is really good?
Oh, once it's over. After the performance. Yeah. I can sort of relax, and because it's not about winning, it's about being part of it, So after my performance is over, then I can relax and enjoy the rest of the night, no matter what happens.
You've also been a judge.
I have, a couple of times.
How does that work?
It's so much easier. I get to sit on my fat ass and just tick boxes. It's because the first 3 years, of course, I'd never seen the show live. So the fourth year when I judged, I was blown away. It is phenomenal. So being part of the judging process and bringing that to the judging panel, I think is important as well, because a lot of the judges probably have never done drag and certainly wouldn't have been involved in this sort of production or concept. So as I mentioned, there's a lot more to it than just throwing on a wig, some eyelashes and heels and going for it.
So the process of judging, what are you actually looking for?
We are provided with a series of, or a form to complete for a variety of aspects of particularly of the act, Two Girls Only, which includes the question and answer, obviously the performance itself, how it relates to the country, quality of the performance, costumes, the whole package, and then it's just broken up and the judging panel are sort of required to mark and comment from there. And after all the Act Two girls are have performed, then we're sort of shuffled away into a side room to talk about, discuss, debate and argue the merits of each person's performance. Then it's, again, never a given, because although the Act Two girls are predetermined, the actual finalists on the night are not, or the actual winners are not.
So have there been any kind of controversies in terms of, you know, an audience favourite not getting through, or?
I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I would prefer not to go into the specifics.
It's really interesting, though, that this pageant has been going for at least, well, for 10 productions for so many years, to actually keep everyone or the majority of people happy and coming back and participating. What holds all that together?
Good question. Because when you look at the audience, it certainly isn't a predominantly gay audience. I think part of the uniqueness and beauty of it is that every performer has a group of supporters. So it gets that personal interaction between performance and audience, which obviously generally shows don't have. So it's that personal interaction. And I think those that have been going to all or the majority of the shows are just wonder what's going to happen next, because every show has gotten bigger, brighter and better. In the first, I'd say 2 or 3 years, Headgear of Nation was what it was. But the last perhaps 2 or 3 years, the Headgear of Nation now is no bigger than 2 metres by 2 metres. So it's, you know, just the concepts, the visual impact is larger than life. And the creativity of people is just phenomenal. So it's it's progressed over the years, and it's just gotten better over the years. As to whether it could hold that progression in years to come, I would probably question, because it has to plateau somewhere, which isn't a bad thing.
Headgear, how do you come up with a concept that will be around 2 meters by 2 meters that will actually be able to be moved on stage? I mean, the logistics, the practicalities of doing that would be
not always easy. I the very first year when I was Miss Russia, I actually didn't wear a wig. I wore a headgear, which was probably about a meter high but reasonably slim, and for me that's sort of been a bit of a trademark, and since then it's sort of probably been more incorporated into the show, particularly the headgear of nations. For Transylvania, for instance, I had a spider that was ballpark 2 meters by 2 meters on a web, but I actually had it on a backpack, so it wasn't just sitting on my head. It had to have some stability, and a few people have done that. Others have sort of muscle boys assisting them with it, so it's, yeah, it's all doable, but sometimes with smoke and mirrors.
And so in the creation of the headgear and the garments, is this something that you're doing personally?
Yep, I can sew, which I'm fortunate to be able to do, so that in itself is a saving. So I make most of my own costumes and always make my own headgear, so yeah.
Can you describe some of your creations? What are some of your favourites?
For when I did Miss India, and that year the semi-finalists/finalists had to do swimwear, so I designed a flesh-coloured costume, which had sort of a little bra effect to it, made out of lotus petal effects, and I walked out on stage with a reasonably large headpiece, and as I lifted my arms up, so my other four arms followed, so I was the god, the Ganesh, I think it is, with the six arms. So that was a bit of a favourite. It was seen to be a crowd pleaser too. And that same year, Headgear Nations wasn't nearly as big and grand as it is now, so I actually had an elephant headpiece made for me. Other outfits for Miss France, when I, part of my act incorporated two dummies either side, which I made and sort of had on a little apparatus, so when my arms moved, their arms moved, and legs and so forth. So, but that was a concept I actually stole from the original movie that I saw. So, Transylvania was probably a lot less flamboyant in its costuming, but then it had perhaps other effects like the tombstones, and the male dancers came out of masks and bits and pieces. So yeah, each show's been a little bit different as far as obviously the concept of the costumes go.
And do you find that it's all pretty much set in stone in the rehearsal period, so actually when you get into the theatre it all kind of work smoothly, and how's that process going from rehearsal to...
It's just like clockwork, not. yeah, rehearsing in an area and then on stage is a very different concept for somebody who's not in the industry and not used to performing even. I know I've been reasonably fortunate with the night, but I know even leading up to the night there's been one or two in dress rehearsals who've just had shocking experiences with technical issues, and it has nothing to do with the technicians, it's just the fact that it just hasn't come together as their concept was planned. On the night it always comes together, of course, because no one knows any different, but your concept and how you visualise it, and on the night, for instance, Miss Transylvania had dry ice filtering through the stage before she came on. Well, frankly, by the time Buffy and Bimbo had finished chatting, the dry ice had gone. For Miss Transylvania, that was a little disappointing, but there's no stopping those two from talking. So just little things like that. The audience wouldn't have known, but that's an example of perhaps, the performer's concept, perhaps not quite coming out on the night.
So what is the thing that keeps you coming back for more?
I'm a sucker for punishment. Don't have much else to do in my life. Don't get out much. Single, always looking for a date. But ultimately, it's the fundraising aspect. I have a very, very dear friend who was diagnosed 11 years ago now, HIV/AIDS. He thankfully is still with us. He came close to not being, and it was personally for me a bit of a shake-up. And I know others who, you know, have also succumbed to it. And as I said before, it's something I can do for my community a little bit, give a little bit back as best I can. So it's ultimately it's about the fundraising aspect and bringing awareness to the issues.
It's quite an interesting concept, the show, because actually there isn't a lot in the show, is there, that is kind of overtly about HIV/AIDS, but yet the show is all about, in terms of the money all goes to AIDS-related charities.
Yep. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? I guess it can be argued both ways, but possibly, potentially for those of us who need to get sponsors, I think if it was overtly out there, it would make it more difficult, to be honest, unfortunately, but that's just the nature of the beast, because a number of us have gotten sponsorship from corporates, and while corporates are happy to sponsor, I don't think it's always going to be an easy ask and task for them to give something which is perhaps blatantly out there for the cause.
When you say sponsorship, what does that sponsorship cover?
Well, for Miss Transylvania, I would have spent around about $5,000 for her. and that would be covering the dancers, the choreographer, making of the video, costuming. Makeup, because on the night I actually do get a professional makeup artist to do it for me, because I'm not that good, and probably other bits and bobs are sort of all related to it, so it does add up. So over the last few years particularly, I've managed to through sort of my contacts, mainly through work, I've managed to get sponsors to assist with that. It doesn't always cover it. In fact, it's never covered it, but at least it certainly goes a good way.
And in terms of time, how much time would you spend?
For the act one, rehearsals generally start 5 or 6 weeks out, and that's 2 nights a week. For act two, generally start a month out, and that's 2 or 3 times a week. Costumes, I generally start 3 or 4 months out. So it's a lot of time.
The person at the centre of the Queen of the Whole Universe, Jonathan, what is he like as a director? Can you describe how he pulls people together?
Oh, I couldn't on tape, not at all. he's a phenomenal guy. Yep. He's a professional in so many ways. He's driven, he's focused, he's compassionate, he's approachable. I mean, it's fair to say that we both probably have strong personalities and don't always agree on things at times, but we both respect that as well. We're both, you know, mature guys and able to discuss issues that we may not be comfortable with, happy with, or whatever, and at the end of the day, walk away smiling. You know, I have a lot of time for Jonathan and Kevin, of course, because without them, this concept and the money raised wouldn't have happened.
We're coming up to the final queen of the whole universe. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's sad in lots of ways, but I can also appreciate why it is in lots of ways. I guess on reflection, and I think I've spoken to Jonathan about it before, perhaps to keep the concept alive for longer, perhaps every second year would have been an idea. But in saying that, having it annually, it's really kept the concept alive. Because at the end of the day, there's only a certain amount of people who want to be involved in the show and the concept. And there's certainly only a certain amount of people who want to take it to the next level of being Act Two. And unfortunately, for those poor people who are coming in at Act Two now, they've got it so much harder than we did on day one, because no one had any concept of what to expect. They didn't have any expectations, and really we could do anything we wanted, and you know, they didn't know, they, the audience, didn't know any different. But now the bar's been raised so high that you really, yeah, you have to give a good performance or people will know. So for the new ones, I feel for. I think it's probably, yeah, it's probably time for it to be put to bed, unfortunately.
For that last audience, the people out there in the dark, would you have any special message that you would want to give them?
Oh, I'm sure I do. I guess ultimately just remember what it's all about. Remember why, I'll say, we have put the performances on for the last 10 years. Sure, it's to be entertained, and without the audience, it wouldn't have been going for 10 years, but ultimately it's also about the cause, and never forget that, because unfortunately it seems that HIV/AIDS is going to be around for longer than we'd hoped for. So whether you support this fundraiser or another fundraiser, just I'd like people to remember ultimately what it's for.